Dignity Health here, official healthcare provider of the San Francisco Giants. Winning is a team sport powered by great dedicated fans. When everyone is all in, magic happens. When it comes to healthcare, the Dignity Health team at Sequoia Hospital is all in too. Every day, the healthcare professionals at Sequoia Hospital in Redwood City are ready to deliver exceptional, compassionate care to you and your family. Dignity Health. Hello, human kindness.
Welcome back to Extra Innings on KNBR, the sports leader. And my guest today was a 1999 Willie Mack Award winner. He's also on the San Francisco Giants Wall of Fame. He played 9 years with the San Francisco Giants. He's got a new nickname now. It's called Manager. Let's bring in Marvin Bernard. How are you doing today, Marvin?
Hey, Bill. How's it going? How are you doing?
Doing really well. You are now the manager of the Nicaraguan National Baseball Team. You are in the United States now, ready to try to possibly get into the 32nd Olympian in Tokyo in 2021. Tell us a little bit about your new role.
Well, I've been doing this for a while now. This is my third time that I've come down, and they've put me in charge of the national team. Also trying to help out with the youth, the younger teams, trying to get, like you said, this qualification to go to the Olympics would be a huge step for us. So we're here in Fort St. Lucie trying to win this tournament and qualify for the Olympics, like you said. And this is not the easiest path that anybody's ever going to have to do.
You're absolutely right. I was looking into this today as we talked this morning, and I was like, man, you got a hard road ahead of you. In your bracket, you have United States,
yeah.
You have Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico, and then it's you. And I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
And let's just talk a little bit about this. United States is managed by Mike Socha. Dominican Republic is managed by Fernando Tatis Sr. Puerto Rico is managed by Juan Gonzalez. Now, all of a sudden, we go in the other bracket. Venezuela is Jose Alguacil, who is the AA manager with the Giants. So let's just go back in time here real quick, Marvin. You were born in Bluefields, Nicaragua. It's a port city by the Caribbean coast. And really, when you were there as a young kid, baseball was limited. You really didn't have much baseball areas to play on. Equipment was tough. You were a left-handed thrower, so there wasn't that many gloves and left-handed. Tell me a little bit about your childhood in Nicaragua.
Well, I mean, in today's there isn't much difference in today. I mean, you know, today they you know, you got little professional league and you have a lot more guys have signed, but you still see the kids running around with no gloves on, you know, playing in the backyards or in the fields or whatnot. Back then it was obviously different because technology was so much different. Also, we used to be able to get one game per week, and that game would consist of either the Cardinals or the Orioles at the time. And the two reasons being is because, one, Dennis Martinez was with the Orioles, and B, David Green was with the Cardinals. So pretty much right now, the only games you get down in Nicaragua is when the Yankees play, because Jonathan Loaiza plays for the Yankees. You know, so you're gonna wherever the Nicaraguan kid goes, those are the games you're gonna get to watch.
And those were your notable stars, correct? Dennis Martinez and Dennis Green back then.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, Dennis Martinez at one point was the winningest pitcher in Latin American history until Bartolo Colon broke his record. And then David Green, when he came out of Nicaragua, he was being compared to Roberto Clemente, you know, a five-tool type guy who could, you know, do anything and everything, you know, had power, had, you know, some bat speed, had the great arm, played good defense, and could run. So as a kid, those are the two guys that you imitate, and then you either wanted to be an outfielder or you're going to be a pitcher. And wherever those guys went, that's where your loyalty went. It wasn't – you weren't loyal to the team. You were loyal to those guys. You know, those are like national heroes type guys to us, and, you know, they still are.
So at 12 years old, your parents moved to Los Angeles. You went to Bell High School, did very well there. Then you kind of went to a couple junior colleges, El Camino College, La Harbor Junior College. How was playing junior college back then for you?
For me, I ran into that same aspect that happens a lot, that's been happening. It's been changing a little bit with the Nicaraguan player. We played the game physically. We didn't play it mentally. And, you know, we know that baseball, you know, it's played more in the head than, you know, the physical part everybody can see. But the little intricacies that happens, no one sees. And if you're not, you know, no one teaches you that, it's hard for you to pick things up. So going to junior college for me was a huge, huge deal because I was like a sponge. I was hearing things and seeing things baseball-wise that I had never seen or heard before. So I just sucked everything up. And, you know, I could do some things. I could run a little bit. I could throw a little bit. I could hit a little bit. And once I started understanding why you did certain things, things started making more sense, and it got a little bit easier, to be honest with you. So that's one of the issues we have going on in Nicaragua right now. The mindset that we have to change is that we play the game physically, but we don't play it mentally. You know, one of the problems that happens is that at the little league level, you don't have enough coaches that know the intricacies, and they just let the kids play. Well, by the time they get to, let's say, you know, 18, 19, 20 years old, you know, you have to convince them that the reason you keep the ball down from the outfield to third base is because you're trying to keep the double play in order at all times. Well, in their mind is, well, how am I supposed to show off my arm if I don't throw that big rainbow all the way to third base? you know, so those are the little things you got to struggle with, you know, with them. Sure. And some, it takes some time, you know, it all takes time, patience. When they start seeing, when they start seeing that, that's when it gets fun.
Yeah. Well, you went from junior college to Lewis Clark State College in Idaho, and that's when you really kind of turned it on. You hit 373, you stole 24 stolen bases. You ended up going and winning the 92 national championship for that college. And right after that, you were ready to go to pro ball, but pro ball wasn't ready for you. And one of the things that happened, the Giants finally drafted you in the 50th round, which was the last round of professional baseball. But at that time, you just said, hey, I don't care what round I get drafted by, I'm going to go play professional baseball now. How did that feel by just being drafted? It didn't matter what round, because the next sentence I'm going to say is, you are a handful of guys that got drafted in the 50th round. I mean, we're talking less than five players that have made it to the big leagues, and that's what I would like to pat you on the back for.
You know. I mean, it's funny you say that. At one point, we had two of those guys on the same team with the Giants. I don't know if you knew that. I don't know if you remember Edward Guzman, the backup catcher that we had, Puerto Rican kid. He was also a 50th round pick, and we're with the Giants in the big leagues at the same time.
That's great.
So that's kind of unusual. Me going to Lewis and Clark was the best thing that ever happened to me. Like I said, physically I could do some things in the game, but the mental part, the mental toughness that I needed to get to the big leagues, that's what I got when I went to Lewis and Clark. Once you go to the minor leagues, once you're in the minor leagues, nobody cares about you. Nobody pays attention to you. They don't care how bad the road trip was. They don't care. They don't care how, you know, whether you slept or not. You know, they just know that you have to go play the game, and whether you do good or not, it's on you. Well, it takes a lot of mental toughness to be able to go through something like that. Well, I had experienced that already because of where I went to college and some of the road trips that we would take, and the bus would break down, and, you know, the coach would be on you. And he was hard. He was hard mentally, and he was trying to do things for you that you didn't realize what he was trying to do. He was trying to help you out. So, again, once I got to the minor leagues, for me, it was a piece of cake. It was another, you know, just another day. You know,
Marvin,
you hear guys
complain
about.
Did you play center field most of the time? Were you a corner outfield? What outfield position was normal for you?
Right field. I've always, in high school, I played right field. In junior college, I played right field. In Lewis and Clark, I played right field. Once I get to pro ball is when they start sticking me in center field. Mm-hmm. When I was in double A, I played right field the whole time. When I got to triple A, I would play all three of them. Not until I get to the big leagues is when I get, become a, regular center fielder, which was terrifying for me, to be honest with you. I didn't like it. I didn't feel comfortable, but I had to do what I had to do in order to survive. But in right field is where I would have loved to have played my whole career if I had a choice.
Well, I tell you what, when you got to the big leagues in 1995, you had a nine-year career. You ended up batting .271 lifetime, 54 home runs, 21 triples, 138 doubles. And I remember the doubles, man. You were hitting gaps constantly. 260 RBIs, 105 stolen bases. I'll come back to you with these numbers, but I want to talk about active baseball right now. Stolen bases, kind of out the window. Padres are really doing it, and most everybody else is kind of on that minimum side of stolen bases. What do you think about that at the big league level at the present time?
Well, today's world is all about what the computer says. You know, they got a stat for everything. And I think it's great. There's nothing wrong with that. Information is information, and if you can get information to help you win ball game, go for it. But at the same time, I don't think it's the best thing to just get rid of something that they've been doing for millions of years, right? That, stealing bases is a way of manufacturing runs. You don't even have to get the ball out the infield in order to get a run. It's almost like you having one of these guys have this tool, and now you're getting rid of it because the computer tells you that the percentage are that you're going to get thrown out more than anything. Yep. So for me, I think the Padres are doing, things the right way. I mean, they're figuring, hey, you know what? Let's keep mixing with the new and just keep some of the old because it works. Think about when Jackie Robinson came into baseball. He revolutionized the whole pitching part, part of the game. Mm-hmm. Back in the day, guys used to have this big, huge leg kit. He forced them, to do something different to try to stop him from stealing bases.
Yeah.
So that's a extra weapon that you could use. Nowadays, you just got to make sure you use it the right way, use it at the right time, and try to, take advantage of the fact that, let's say, for example, a pitcher throws a nasty split finger, a big overhand curveball, he's got a big leg kick. Why not take advantage of it if it's there?
Yeah, totally agree with you. Let's go into 1998, your best year with the Giants. You hit .322 on base all the time. Leading off a lot, that was a spot in the order that you like to hit in, and you were on base a lot. Tell me a little bit about that year.
That year was kind of odd, right? Because, let's see, I came up in 95. I played every day in 96 as everybody got hurt. In 97, I made the team as a pinch hitter. And for me, I didn't care. I just wanted to play. Well, come 98, at the All-Star break, they decide to trade Darrell Hamilton, bring in Ellis Burke. And, Dusty said, hey, we're going to give you a shot, see what you could do. To me, it sounded like a sink or swim type deal, So you figure, hey, you've been complaining and that you want to play. And,
I can hear Dusty
you
saying
play,
that,
well,
too.
Here's your shot. Yeah, here it is. This is it right here. Either you're going to make it or you're going to be looking for something else to do. And, I grabbed a hold of those rails and things weren't great for me. And I couldn't complain. I mean, I was.
And you were a spark plug. There was no doubt about it. You were a spark plug at the top of the order. In 99, you had your biggest home run outlet. You had 16 home runs. You also hit .290. Still in that leadoff spot, my friend. I was looking at these rosters, and, man, every time I see Marvin Menard leading off. Now, I remember all that, of course, but a lot of listeners don't. And so that's what I'm saying. As a leadoff guy, you were putting runs on the board. RBIs were up, home run ball was up. Was there anything different that you did in your approach that year?
Well, one thing that, you know, by then I've had 5 years in the big leagues, 4 or 5 years in the big leagues, and I know all the pitchers by then. You start learning their tendencies. You start understanding what their out pitches, what they like throwing when they're ahead in the count, when they're behind in the count. And then one of the bigger things that happened was, I remember at the, you know, during the bat, we were taking batting practice around the cage, and Dusty was there, and he said, "Hey, you know, when you're ahead in the count, you need to quit trying to slap that ball the other way. You know, you have enough, you know, pop to be able to, you know, hit a home run or two. You know, when the count's in your favor and you're ahead in the count, cut it loose. Mm-hmm. You know, cut it loose and see what happens." So I took his advice, and times when I was ahead in the count, instead of taking pitches as a leadoff hitter, because he told me, he goes, "You're only a leadoff man once. That's at the beginning of the game. Once the game starts, you're not leading off anymore." You know, of course, when the scoreboard dictates, you know, pitcher, you know, comes off, had a long inning, and you're leading off, you got to take a little bit more pitches, give him a break, let him, you know, catch his breath a little bit. He goes, "But other than that, you know, when there's man on second base, you're not a leadoff hitter now. You're an RBI guy now." Mm-hmm. You know, so all those things have, you know, changed my mindset, made me start seeing I'm thinking a little bit different. And like you said, I started cutting it loose, you know. I had an idea what they were going to do to me. Huh?
Well, I was just going to say, in 99, your teammates and your coaching staff definitely saw what you were doing, because you definitely led by example. And some of the things you did on the field led to the Willie Mack Award winner in 1999 at the end of the year for leadership and spirit. And that was a huge award back then. You met Willie McCovey. We both knew Willie McCovey, a great man. And that award definitely means a lot to you. Tell me a little bit after that year how you accepted that and how enthusiastic you were.
Yeah, I mean, again, if you're a Giants fan, everybody knows who Willie McCovey is, obviously. But then when you get to hang out and meet the man, I mean, his stature grows even more. I mean, there's times when he would sit next to you and you didn't even realize he was there because he was so quiet. You know, he paid attention to everything, he absorbed. And when if he said something to you, it's because he couldn't hold on to it anymore and he wanted to help you with it. You know, so, of course, when he opens his, you know, mouth, you're going to open your ears and just, you know, be a sponge and suck up everything that he's saying. So for me, it was a big deal. To be able to do what I did and had the chance to be able to do what I did with him. Yo entiendo. Hey, Bill, I'm sorry. I have to go do this COVID test right now.
Yeah, let's close this up right now real quick. I just want to congratulate you on what you're doing. I want to wish you all the luck in this tournament. We're definitely going to keep eyes on you, Marvin, and I just want to appreciate your time, spending a little time with us tonight. And good luck May 31st right here on the soils of Florida. You're up against USA, so all the best to you, Marvin.
Thanks, Bill. I appreciate it.
I appreciate your time. Thanks so much. All right, that was Marvin Bernard. He's in Florida right now with a Nicaraguan baseball team. They just landed. He's got to do a couple things, and one of the biggest things, they're taking their whole team through the COVID test. I had a chance now just to talk to him a little bit about his life in Nicaragua and what his next steps are. And all the best to Marvin Bernard. So we're going to take a quick break right now and come right back on Extra Innings on KNBR, the sports leader.